Welcome to the Superconscious Success Podcast, where Jen and her Superconscious Success Family co-hosts bring you valuable content each and every week on topics relating to manifestation, spirituality, and most of all, using your superconscious to manifest success in all areas of your life. Now on to today's episode.
Hey there, Superconscious Success fam. Welcome back to another chapter reading. We are going so well with this book from Napoleon Hill, Grow Rich with Peace of Mind. And I'm looking forward to bringing this chapter to you where we will discuss the law of compensation in great depth. It is a very important law that talks about how you'll be compensated for the value that you give out. And I think you'll get a lot of value from this particular chapter. So make sure head across to the inner circle, as I always say, so that you can get access to all of the summaries. And also check out the Superconscious Success podcast, because that will also give you some incredible interviews and solo episodes for you to be able to learn a bit more about your superconscious and about enlightenment and all of that wonderful spiritual stuff. So remember, I have two programs that are on the go with some amazing collaborators of mine. I've got Your Spiritual Shift with Carl Gruber, and I've also got Peace and Prosperity with Christopher Salem, and I am really excited to be launching those at the start of September this year. So if you do want to get access to that, then go to yourspiritualshift.com and also go to peaceandprosperity.com and you'll be able to sign up for it early. Okay, so thanks so much for listening to that little spiel. And now we are actually going to go on talking about the law of compensation. And the chapter title is Win Mighty Aid from the Eternal Law of Compensation. And listen up and I'll speak to you at the end of the chapter. So here we go. The law of compensation can work for you or against you depending upon the way you guide it. It may take many years for punishment to follow transgression or for reward to follow virtue, but the compensation always will find you out. Nature makes sure that any excess is followed by a leveling. Fear gives way to the law of compensation, and envy and malice also disappear from life when one understands how the law of compensation can lead anyone to great success, because anyone can control the way it works for them. Drop in at any public library, even a very small one, and ask the librarian for Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay on compensation. She will almost certainly be able to direct you to the exact shelf where Emerson's work are lined up. Just a sober row of books, but I think of them as buzzing and humming with success potential. It will be easy to spot the volume that contains compensation. It will be the volume most thumbed. Yet alas, that volume may be missing. Some overeager student has borne it off to help him write this term paper and has kept it. Or some man who wonders why he never got ahead has made his own to read over and over. Spare a sigh for those who do not realise the failure potential that is inherent in stealing, and do your bit for others by buying the library another copy. Secure a copy for yourself too. Once you have read Compensation 3 times, you'll read it 100 times. You'll want it at your bedside. It is a must for people who want to understand themselves, understand the world, and find wonderful peace of mind that will stay with them. The Law of Compensation in Action. Before we finish this chapter, we shall come back to that essay, which is perhaps the most important ever written. Now I want to tell you a story in several parts. I know it's a true story because I lived it. As you know, I have made mistakes and I have yielded at times to the wrong kind of emotions. Had I not learned from my mistakes, I would not consider myself worthy of giving advice. But very definitely, I've learned from them and built success and peace of mind upon my hard-won knowledge. Well, there was a time some decades ago when I had been through a personal crisis and it got me. This was connected with an adventure which, while it brought me valuable experience, brought me little else. I found it necessary to make a fresh start financially, mentally, and spiritually. Being in the downtown business district of Atlanta, Georgia, I visited my friend and former business associate Mark Wooding. He recently had opened a large cafeteria right in the heart of the business section. Mark told me his business was in serious difficulty. He had not taken into account the fact that downtown Atlanta business houses closed early each evening, or at least they did in that era. After that early close of business, the district was as quiet as a graveyard. The result was that he did splendidly at lunchtime, but had very few customers at the dinner hour when he had counted on making a good part of his income. Was there any way of persuading people to have dinner at his cafeteria? He hadn't thought of any. My mind had been filled with my own problems, but I'd learned long before that when one cannot find the solution to his own problems, the best thing he can do is to look for someone with a greater problem and help him find its solution. I switched my thoughts to a consideration of my friend's predicament. Looking around, I noted he had a beautiful large dining room which could seat several hundred people. His equipment was superb. The location was good on a corner near transportation and parking facilities. People could reach the cafeteria easily and they would eat well and pleasantly when they got there. How to bring them in? I decided to give away information I had been in the habit of selling. The answer flashed into my mind. I suggested to Mark that I give a lecture course on the science of personal achievement. I would lecture each night right there in the dining room. The lectures would be free to all who came for dinner and remained for the lectures. We announced this plan through the local newspapers. We sent printed announcements to all the business houses in the district, and the first night we turned away more people than we could seat. There was seldom a night thereafter when we did not have to turn away a large number of people from the completely filled dining room. Mark's dinners became the major source of his income in record time. The cost? Just the cost of the advertising. I'd been in the habit of charging for my services as a lecturer, but now I donated my services without charge to a friend who needed a helping hand. That sets certain invisible forces going, and that is the first part of the story. The law of compensation begins to work in my behalf. We are not gifted with crystal balls with which to foretell the future. If I'd had this power, which an all-wise mind wisely had withheld from us, I would have seen that my unselfish giving marked the most important turning point of my life. Even now, in considering the compensation I eventually received for my services, I realise I am still being well paid. Before we go any further, remember this. I cured my own ills by helping a friend cure his. Pause right now and think how you can apply that mighty principle which always pays, and often in far more than money. My lectures on the success philosophy attracted a wide variety of people to Wooding's cafeteria. Among them were several business executives, including an executive on the Georgia Power Committee. Company. This man was so impressed by the lectures that he asked me to be the guest speaker at a private meeting of the leading officers of several Southern Electric Power companies. The law of compensation was humming and buzzing all around me. In the audience at that private meeting was Homer Pace, an executive of the South Carolina Electric and Gas Company. After I had spoken, he introduced himself. He told me he had been a student of the science of personal achievement for many years. He said, "I have a friend I'd like you to meet. He is a president of a small college and owns a good-sized printing house. He speaks your language so well that I strongly suspect he is another of your long-distance students. You ought to know each other. Will you write to him?" I wrote promptly. The college president and publisher came immediately to Atlanta to call upon me. Perhaps the shade of the Sage of Concord, as Emerson was called, smiled over my shoulder during the two-hour conversation. The college president and I made a verbal agreement. I would move to his hometown and rewrite my entire philosophy, and he would publish it. Patterns appear in many lives. As you can see, when I've needed a publisher, merely following my own philosophy always helped me find one. On the 1st of January 1941, I began to work on the science of personal achievement, now being taught in schools, which I sponsor throughout this and other countries. I find a very special compensation. Looking back, I see that the reversals I had suffered just prior to meeting Mark Wooding had left me in something of a state of shock. Now I transmuted that shock into hard work, a labour of love. Every misfortune always carries the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit. Soon I found peace of mind such as I'd never known before. Before I describe the third episode in this many-sided story of compensation, let me make clear that romance definitely was not on my mind. As for marriage, it did not seem anything that ever would happen to me. Yet a peaceful and active mind is not afraid of new ideas or new conditions. When I'd moved to that little South Carolina town, I took an apartment that happened to be near the home of the publisher's secretary. For several months after my arrival, I saw the secretary only at her desk in the ordinary course of business. She had been the support of her family since her father had died while she was quite young. She now had been associated with two generations of the family that owned the business. She had a responsible position and she was quite happy in her work. Between family responsibilities, she helped to educate her younger sisters, and the demands of holding down an executive job, she was very busy. She had given little thought to marriage. One might say it was the last thing on her mind. And now perhaps a little pagan cherub with a bow and arrow smiled over my shoulder. Now and then I invited the secretary to join me for dinner. Now and again we went to a show in one of the nearby towns. I found out that the moment she got away from family and office matters, she had quite a different personality, a wonderful personality. That woman was almost a perfect duplicate of the greatest woman I ever had known, my stepmother. No wonder I admired her. The picture began to develop rapidly. We took motor trips. On Sunday mornings, we listened together to the Mormon to Burnacle radio services while we're driving in the country. The law of compensation works in ways that are strange and unpredictable. I parted from this woman who attracted me so deeply. First of all, the pattern again. I lost my publisher. The attack on Pearl Harbor and the events that followed affected my publisher's affairs so strongly that he brought our arrangement to an abrupt end. Then I left town. This event arose from the telephone call from the Latournay company, which I've related, and I took over that important public relations assignment at their plant in Georgia. There I was destined to meet the greatest opportunity of my life to demonstrate the soundness of my philosophy as a builder of harmonious relations between employees and employer. With all modesty, I can say that my influence in that plant, with its 2,000 employees, changed everyone for the better, including top management. Later I read that the war in the Pacific depended heavily for its success on the US ability to move quantities of earth and rock in building airstrips on occupied islands. The Latournay earth moving machinery was largely used on those jobs, and perhaps indirectly I made my contribution. Again, one opportunity led to another. I decided on another move to make my philosophy all the more available to industry. I would prepare a film about it, and this caused a move to Los Angeles, hub of the motion picture industry. I had not forgotten that wonderful woman in South Carolina. She had not forgotten me. The day before I left for the West Coast, she became my wife. She is also my secretary, my priceless business associate, and the most important member of my mastermind group. We have now delighted in more than 20 years of this perfect partnership. Talk about compensation. Every act rewards itself. That is Emerson speaking. We shall visit with him soon. You realize, I am sure, that the reward of any act may not be a reward as such, but rather a penalty if that is what the act deserves. The act rewards itself, not you, in the sense that is meant here, and so the reward is fitting. This is, you may say, is nothing but old-fashioned morality. Indeed it is. It is modern morality as well, valid when man invented the wheel, valid when perhaps man will invent the means to duplicate himself in a test tube, and it is more than morality. I have shown you the law of compensation at work in my life in the hope that you will stop and think of ways it has worked for you. You will see these ways as manifestations of cause and effect. You perform some action and that got the ball rolling. But it can be an accident that thousands of years of commentary refer to the fact that the act of giving invariably precedes the act of receiving. That when we cast bread upon the waters, it does come back. We see the law of compensation as it brings us a better job, a sum of money, an opportunity to fulfill ourselves, a meeting with someone who turns out to be a lifelong partner in love, and there is much we do not see. Unseen silent forces influence us constantly. Some are good for us, some are harmful. This volume speaks on many pages of the solid bread and butter aspects of life, but it speaks as well of the unseen and the omnipresent. As I show you how to be rich with peace of mind, I also show you how to choose the friendly, invisible forces rather than the unfriendly, and how to make the favorable forces your ally. Now, let us sit down with Mr. Emerson by candlelight in his book Line Study. Every act rewards itself, or in other words, integrates itself in a twofold manner. First, in the thing, or in real nature, and secondly, in the circumstance, or in apparent nature. Men call the circumstance the retribution. The casual retribution is in the thing and is seen by the soul. The retribution in the circumstance is seen by the understanding. It is inseparable from the thing, but is often spread over a long time and so does not become distinct until after many years. The specific stripes may follow late after the offence, but they follow because they accompany it. Crime and punishment grow out of one stem. Punishment is a fruit that unsuspected ripens within the flower of the pleasure which concealed it. Cause and effect, means and ends, seed and fruit cannot be severed, for the effect already blooms in the cause, the end pre-exists in the means, and the fruit in the seed. Think back upon the story I've told you in detail. The four episodes of success in my life which began at Woodings in Atlanta. The cause behind those episodes was a simple act of service rendered to a friend I was able to help. It brought me blessings which still continue. Had I substituted for my act of service some selfish or unworthy act, I would not now enjoy those blessings but might still suffer under the penalty which the same law of compensation surely would have brought my way. There is a third silent party to all our bargains. Remember that. The Sage of Concord continues. Men suffer all their life long under the foolish superstition that they can be cheated, but it is as impossible for a man to be cheated by anyone but himself as for a thing to be and not to be at the same time. There is a third silent party to all our bargains. The nature and soul of things takes on itself the guarantee of the fulfillment of every contract, so that honest service cannot come to loss. If you serve an ungrateful master, serve him the more. Put God in your debt. Every stroke shall be repaid. The longer the payment is withholden, the better for you. For compound interest on compound interest is the rate and usage of this exchequer. The third silent party. There is the unseen force, which is in its timeless way makes sure of the fulfillment of every contract we make with the world. And now let us see how Emerson expresses his understanding of the fact that every adversity carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit. The changes which break up at short intervals the prosperity of men are advertisements of a nature whose law is growth. Evermore, it is the order of nature to grow, and every soul is by this intrinsic necessity quitting its whole system of things, its friends and homes and laws and faith, as the shellfish crawls out of its beautiful but stony case, because it no longer admits of its growth and slowly forms a new house. And yet the compensations of calamity are made apparent to the understanding also after long intervals of time. A fever, a mutilation, a cruel disappointment, a loss of wealth, a loss of friends, seems at the moment unpaid loss and unpayable. But the sure years reveal the deep remedial force that underlies all facts. The death of a dear friend, wife, brother, lover, which seemed nothing but privation, somewhat later assumes the aspect of a guide or genius, for it commonly operates revolutions in our way of life, terminates an epoch of infancy or of youth which was waiting to be closed, breaks up a wanted occupation or a household or style of living, and allows the formation of new ones more friendly to the growth of character. It permits or constrains the formations of new acquaintances and the reception of new influences that prove of the first importance of the next years. And the man or woman who would have remained a sunny garden flower with no room for its roots and too much sunshine for its head, by the falling of the walls and the neglect of the gardener, is made the banyan of the forest, yielding shade and fruit to wide neighbourhoods of men. If Emerson had not written those lines long before I was born, I might well believe he was writing directly to me. Do you sense perhaps that he was writing directly to you? Please, as you read, take my experiences as reminders to consider your own. The lessons I have learned have been learned by millions, and none of us is very different from his brother. I am particularly indebted to Emerson for his views on the subject of fear. They were responsible for a self-imposed house cleaning which removed from my mind all breeding places of fear, and I hope the following paragraph does the same for you. Fear is an instructor of great sagacity. One thing he always teaches, that there is rottenness where he appears. He is a carrion crowd, and though you see not well what he hovers for, there is death somewhere. Our property is timid, our laws are timid, our cultivated classes are timid. Fear for ages has boded and mowed and gibbered our government and property. That obscene bird is not there for nothing. He indicates great wrongs which must be revised. And although I once had a tendency to envy seemingly more fortunate persons, that tendency left me after I was influenced by the following excerpt from Emerson's essay on compensation. Every excess causes a defeat, every defeat an excess. Every sweet hath its sour, every evil its good. Every faculty which is a receiver of pleasure has an equal penalty put on its abuse. It is to answer for its moderation with its life. For every grain of wit, there is a grain of folly. For everything you have missed, you have gained something else. And for everything you gain, you lose something. If riches increase, they are increased that use them. If the gatherer gathers too much, nature takes out of the man what she puts into his chest, swells the estate but kills the owner. Nature hates monopolies and exceptions. The waves of the sea do more speedily seek a level from their loftiest tossing than the varieties of conditions tend to equalize themselves. There is always some leveling circumstance that puts down the overbearing, the strong, the rich, the fortunate, substantially on the same ground with all others. Those who have tested Emerson's views find them based on eternal truth. Others who do not really test them may consider them an abstract preachment, or may point to all kinds of exceptions, which are not exceptions at all. For time is an essential element of compensation, and nobody can tell what time will bring. Finally, let us join this great mind in thinking about thinking. Beware when the great God let loose a thinker on this planet. Then all things are at risk. It is as when a conflagration has broken out in a great city, and no man knows what is safe or where it will end. There is not a piece of science, but its flank may be turned tomorrow. There is not any literary reputation, not the so-called eternal names of fame, that may not be revised and condemned. The very hope of man, the thoughts of his heart, the religion of nations, the manners and morals of mankind are all the mercy of a new generalization. Thus the power of mind force to change the world. You may not change the world, but your mind force is ready, willing, and able to cause in your world the changes you need and want, no matter how mighty they may be. Emerson is not alone in celebrating the power of thought to move mountains. I do not know of any other great thinker whose works do not show this inherent understanding, that we are thinking beings who act according to our thoughts, so that thought always precedes action. The thought always builds before the hand builds. Thought is mighty beyond measurement. And so is achievement mighty when the thoughts behind it are unfettered and unafraid. The philosopher as a practical person. We tend to think of philosophers as people who dwell in ivory towers of thought and come up with books that take a lot of learning before you can understand them. There is considerable truth in this picture. Philosophy has come so far since the ancient Greeks first mused upon the world and man that these days the philosopher seems to be talking to the philosophers and we ordinary folk are out in the cold. Consider, however, that the basic purpose of philosophy is to search out the why of things. That is why the science of personal achievement is a philosophy rather than a method or a system. In my previous books, as in this one, I give the truly basic answers to the questions. Why do some men succeed in life while others fail? Why do some individuals and couples live in harmony while others live in constant conflict? And why do some groups get along with other groups in a spirit of mutual help while others hamper and frustrate each other? While the methods by which you make money or handle your affairs or please your wife or preserve harmony between management and labour are important, and I'll show you a number of the key methods, it is the underlying philosophy which is more important still. When your mind holds firmly to the basic concept of wealth, peace of mind, and life success, you build on a firm foundation. When you try to apply methods merely in themselves, you may find you are trying to build on sand. Thus, it pays to be a philosopher in a perfectly practical sense. Faced with a problem or desirous of improving some situation or influencing some other person for your mutual benefit, pause and remember you are a practical philosopher. Thus, you focus your mind upon the basic reasons which always have worked and always will, and immediately you are well guided. The philosopher in action. Does the philosopher meet with some disaster or misfortune? He looks for the cause, he seeks the lesson, he armors himself against the event ever happening again. Likewise, he notices the mistakes other people make. Knowing that human beings are very like one another, he watches for any tendency in himself to make the same mistake and thus almost surely will not make it. The philosopher can foretell the future no more than can others. He knows, however, that the history has a way of repeating itself. He takes inventory of the past and often can evoke a very valid idea of the future. The philosopher bears firmly in mind that the way to help others is to help them find their best selves. He does not try to become a reformer and let himself in for endless effort, which is not likely to do much good. Being a philosopher, such a man knows that time is the great leveler. He is patient and the days and years are his allies, never his adversaries. Knowing that a peaceful mind is likewise an efficient mind, the philosopher allows no heckling from the kind of emotions which upset the mind and make it incapable of conceiving greatly. Knowing there is no limit to mind power, the philosopher does not hem in his powers with small, mean thinking, but thinks in those generous and wide-ranging terms upon which achievement is built. The philosopher businessman does not confuse today's profit with a lifetime's peace of mind and life success. He will not, therefore, take an unfair advantage of anyone, for every act rewards itself. The philosopher knows that thoughts are things, that every thought he sends forth, be it good or bad, comes back in due time, greatly multiplied, to curse him or to bless him according to his nature. The chains of the past never drag after a philosopher with their mournful clank of looking backward. He knows that success lies ahead, life lies ahead, and only takes from the past whatever may have been a valuable lesson. The true philosopher never slanders another person, and when he feels he must give way to righteous indignation, he does not do this as though it were his way of life. It could be for a philosopher. He expresses his indignation as though he were writing it on the sand at the water's edge and hopes no man passes that way before the tide comes in. Sharing is part of a true philosophy, so the philosopher shares freely, knowing that as he shares his blessings, he prepares for new blessings. He knows that sharing plants opportunity for self-benefit, which is well-earned and well-deserved, and that is the kind of benefit he wants to come to him. As philosophers, we pass this book in review. Yes, in our role as seekers of the truth behind human nature and human conduct, we have reviewed much of this book to this page. As a philosopher, remind yourself of the usefulness of review, for the human mind learns by repetition and reinforcement until at length the truth is the rule. The very word philosopher is made of two Greek words meaning love and truth. A philosopher is a lover of the truth. I close this chapter with an anecdote about my grandfather. He believed, as I do, that people learn best from experience. There is a bite in this anecdote, but I believe it helped to teach a bit of philosophy to a certain city slicker. The person to whom I refer stood at the side of the country road which I travelled with my grandfather from Powell's River, Virginia, on our way back home with a load of hay. I was very young enough to be impressed with the stranger's sharp clothing and superior manner. He did not ask for a ride, but jumped onto the slow-moving wagon and said, "Give us a ride, Hayseed." Grandfather made no reply. The horse ambled on, and we left some miles of dusty road behind us. When we had reached Grandfather's place and turned in towards his barn, the stranger slid off the wagon and said, "Hey, how far is it to Big Stone Gap from here?" "Well," said Grandfather considerably, "if you start walking back the way we came, it is about 20 miles. If you keep on the way we were going, I'd say it's about 25,000. Once more, the supreme secret has touched your mind. Perhaps to stay, perhaps to return later, and stay with you always. So, wow, there we go. We learn a lot about the law of compensation, about the power of being able to, you know, what you put out, you have come back to you. So be kind to other people and you'll have kindness come to you. Give value to other people. We don't always need a monetary reward, because remember, what you do put out, you will get in return. So there we go. That is the law of compensation. I am loving this book. I am loving bringing this content to you. We have the summary pages in the inner circle, so go ahead and check them out. And I look forward to you listening to the next chapter, where it's titled "You Are Very Important for a Little While." So that'll be an interesting one to dig into and see what that means. So I look forward to catching up with you then, and I'll see you later. Have a great day. Bye.